Hello and welcome to the Listening Leader podcast series, the show for people who want to do big things in big companies. Over the course of the series, we'll be speaking with some of the world's most innovative CEOs who take an open approach to leadership by engaging their people and listening to their employees and colleagues to help them guide the company forwards. In this episode, I spoke with Philip Hoare, president at Atkins, the British multinational engineering, design, planning, consulting services company. Philip is also the executive sponsor for equality, diversity and inclusion for the United Kingdom and Europe at Atkins. Philip shared the value he places on listening, not just to people's ideas, but to the opinions and experiences of his employees, and how this helps to create a space for more open collaboration. He also spoke about how you can make amazing things happen if you can just get that buy-in from your people within your organisation. We also spoke about the importance of listening on an individual level, as well as a more blanketed approach, with Philip sharing his means of creating an environment that encourages everyone to speak up. He also talked about the importance of creating an environment where individuals have the means to comfortably share their ideas. Philip's sensitivity to the individual person is really prevalent throughout the conversation, with his awareness that employees are not just numbers, but rather actual people with something to offer, really clear. I feel this made for some really insightful points and pieces of advice, which I hope you benefit from. So here's our conversation with Philip Hoare. So a very warm welcome to another episode of the Listening Leaders podcast and to Philip Hoare, our guest for today, the leader at Atkins. Philip, if you could just quickly introduce yourself and Atkins to our audience.
Of course. Hi, Will. And my name is Philip Hoare and I'm the CEO of Atkins, part of the SNC-Lavalin Group. We're a global multidisciplinary engineering consultancy, getting involved in exciting projects and supporting our customers around the world. So it's a great place to be.
Amazing. It certainly sounds like it. And I'm very excited about this conversation today. Now, how we like to start all of these episodes is a really quick fire round to get to know you as a person. And these questions are supposed to be a little bit of fun to just kind of provoke some potentially interesting stuff. So you're now the president at Atkins. You're now running that amazing organization. But what did you want to be when you were younger?
Well, I think I always wanted to be an astronaut. So I don't know, a lot of kids, or a racing car driver, I think. But but quite early on, actually, I was pretty keen about how things worked and how things were built. And so it was really 12 or 13, I'd say, I wanted to be a civil engineer. And it sort of went from there. But astronaut would have been good.
Always had that curiosity into kind of how things are done and how things are made.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so definitely. Yeah, cliched like Lego builder and stuff like that. You know, that sort of started it. But also, you know, I'm amazed by the things you see around us. You know, you walk around London, for example, and the buildings and the infrastructure and how it works is just, I just find it fascinating to this day. You know, so there's a fire, I guess, inside me that sort of moved that way.
Absolutely. I'm always struck by that and the concept that, I know it sounds so simple, but just you walk around, you look at these huge buildings, you think that wasn't there until someone decided to put it there and worked out what it should look like and worked out how to make it happen. And that these things don't happen by accident.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people actually see that, you know, they don't appreciate, and why should they, you know, what goes into the complexity of, you know, building everything that's around us. But it's pretty amazing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're fascinated by ideas, the ideas to build these buildings, the ideas that have built the world around us. What would you say the best idea of all time is, or your favourite idea?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many on there. But I mean, I think one that I think is pretty topical is around vaccinations. You know, so, you know, I think Edward Jenner first came up with the idea of injecting a small amount of smallpox into somebody and then looked at, you know, how that reacted and performed. And you know, if we, you know, it's the global vaccination program now is hopefully going to give us back our freedoms and stop people dying from COVID. And, you know, the way that, you know, we sort of moved on from that early vaccination program to a mass global vaccination program, and the way people are working together and collaborating, I think is awesome. So I'd say in my mind at the moment, the idea to vaccinate was a pretty good one.
Absolutely. Definitely helping us all out now. And then finally, for this quick fire round, what's the best piece of advice that you have ever been given?
So I think it's probably, if you don't ask, you don't get. And that piece of advice actually came from my mum. And I think, you know, from a pretty tough upbringing that she had in Northern Ireland. And if she didn't ask, she didn't get. And But I think that has applied through my life, you know, my career and everything. So, so yeah, if you don't ask, you don't get.
Absolutely. I love it. And you're talking about your career there. So I'd love to start off a little bit around your career. You've risen up the ranks at Atkins and now do a phenomenal job there. But could we take it back right to when you started at Atkins and how you first started, what that kind of looked like in terms of role, and how maybe some of those initial experiences helped shape the leader you are now?
Yeah, so you know, my early career was, you know, I guess like a lot of people who, you know, do civil engineering, come out of university and start a job. And, you know, I worked on some major transportation projects, you know, so motorway widening schemes and bridge building. And, you know, I was focused around sort of transportation projects. And I spent, you know, so the early part of my career on a site on the M5. Anyone who goes down to holiday in Devon or Cornwall, they'll have been stuck on the Avonmouth Bridge at some point. And you know, we strengthened and widened that bridge. And, you know, for me, that was the first time I really properly saw that what I was doing and how it impacted others, you know, so people constructing the bridge and, you know, all the complex work that we had to do around that. And you know, I think if you take the theme of listening, it's when you actually really have to listen to others and say, look, actually what you've done just doesn't work here. And but actually, if you did this, then actually it would work for us and it would make it easier for people to build, or it make it easier for people to understand the concept that you were trying to get across. So, you know, I really, you know, it's easy to go into any environment and be, you know, look at the potential for conflict. You know, you say one thing, I say something else. But you know, right at that early stage, I think it was about listening and understanding how you could make things better. And I think that, you know, that has really influenced me throughout my career then. You know, as you progress to become a team leader and, you know, you start to have staff that you have to manage and you know, work with. And I think I've always been incredibly open, partly from those early learning experiences, to listen to other people's ideas. And
awesome. I love it. Yeah, that's really, really helpful. And that definitely comes across when I've been doing my research around you. I've read an interview with yourself around the diversity and inclusion efforts at Atkins. And I think it talks about what's the one thing you're doing. And you talk about making sure that you're there to listen to people's opinions, people's experiences and things. I think that definitely comes through. I wanted to talk a little bit around your transition, obviously, to get to a kind of role that you're in. You go from a transition from individual contributor through to manager, potentially then through to like leader of a department or an area. Could you talk maybe around potential challenges that you faced at one of those steps and how you might have overcome them, either potentially when you first became a manager and it was like kind of right now there's people that I need to lead, or when you started to manage a department and potentially it's you can't go with that kind of individual coaching approach anymore?
Yeah, so I think, you know, probably again a fairly early experience in this is that, you know, we all have different personalities, don't we? And you know, and at times, you know, particularly when you inherit a team or perhaps you go into a team as a team leader, you know, there's not necessarily the set of people that you would hire into the particular jobs if you're starting with a blank sheet of paper. So I think, you know, it's probably an early experience of actually I had to adapt my leadership style to reflect the different personalities of people in the team. And, you know, so, you know, perhaps, you know, a particular example I can think of is that somebody who regularly didn't contribute to discussions that we were having, and it was about trying to find a way to enable them to contribute in the most effective way. And you know, the answer to these things are super simple, aren't they? Because it took a while, actually, probably for me to begin to get the best from that person. But it was actually a one-to-one conversation that said, look, you know, I think you've got some great ideas to contribute to our team and to what we're doing, but I genuinely don't know how best to help you get them out. And and you know, in the end, it was actually I was sat in a meeting actually with Gloucestershire County Council, and I was looking at how the leader of that meeting did coaxed, you know, responses out of people, and basically what he did was he just gave them time and he gave them some individual time to specifically contribute. And rather than being the voice that talks over, you know, we've all been in meetings of people who do that. And so, you know, so that's what I did. I just created time and space for that person to contribute. And, you know, And how valuable is that? Because then you get an insight you might never have had.
Absolutely. I think a few things jump out for me there. There's the individual approach, right? So making sure that you are understanding individuals rather than taking like a blanket approach. There's almost a bit of vulnerability, the way you talked about how you listened, you said to that person, look, I'm not sure how to best make sure that you're heard. Can you teach me? And then there's almost a little bit of mentorship, whether that person from Gloucestershire County Council knew it, but you were actually kind of learning from what's around you. Is that the kind of approach that you took as you started to scale your leadership and kind of be responsible for more and more people, more and more performance, and potentially start to have those layers that you had to direct and kind of lead?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I personally don't think I've changed my style, actually, you know, in terms of, you know, from being a leader of a small team to a leader of a business of over 20,000 people, you know, so I don't think I've changed my style that much. I guess, you know, what I have done is I am my own person. So I like to basically be who I am and you know, take it or leave it, I guess, in that respect. But I guess what I have done also is I do watch what other people do, and I do listen to what other people say. And you know, you pick up, certainly I have, is little pieces of other people's leadership style. And you see, you know, a tool that worked, you know, in that case, it was a meeting in Gloucestershire where somebody, you know, made specific time in a meeting for people to talk. And in other instances, it's, you know, you want to, I think you want to lead the way you want to be led, you know, so you lead the way you want to be led in that respect. So, you know, when I've worked with other leaders who I've really enjoyed working with, I think, what are the facets of that I've enjoyed? And so, you know, I try then and apply some of those things back to myself. And, you know, my current boss, Ian Edwards, who runs SNC-Lavalin, you know, is very direct in his approach. He's very clear, crystal clear about what his expectations are. And, you know, that's something I've tried to become a little bit sharper on, you know, perhaps in my willingness to want people to flourish on their own. I'm not as crisp as I could be sometimes on direction. So, you know, so I've just sort of tweaked my style a little bit to make sure, because sometimes if you're not direct, the lack of clarity actually is difficult for people to follow.
Absolutely. I think that clarity is really important. And it's great to hear around your kind of lifelong learning, right? And finding that learning from different places. I think that's really, really key. So we've obviously asked you on the show because we see you as a listening leader. And I think you've touched on why you feel it's important, especially with those formative experiences. Now that you are running an organization of 20,000 people, leading an organization of 20,000 people, how do you embed listening into your leadership now? Because you can obviously have those one-to-one conversations, but how else might you kand of make sure that you are listening, understanding, picking up those bits of insight, making sure that people feel heard?
Yeah, so I do that in a number of ways, and I'll just give you a couple of examples. So, you know, one is reverse mentoring. So I have a series of reverse mentors, you know, so people at different stages of their career all over the world, actually. At the moment, I've got five, one in each of the regions that we operate in. And I spend some time with them every 6 weeks, just listening to them. I mean, I ask them questions about, you know, things that I would hope they know, you know, about our business, about our strategy. And but I also spend some time just listening to them about what it's like to be in our organization. And I can't tell you how super powerful that is. And interesting how, you know, five different people use those meetings in different ways, you know. Mm-hmm. So some actually to try and promote their own idea or to push themselves forward for something. Others who just want to chat, you know, and you know, that's brilliant because you just get an insight that you wouldn't otherwise see. The second thing I would say is that I really believe in the power of the network. And so, you know, creating opportunities for people to connect together on topics, right? So it could be technical topic, could be a technical discipline, and bringing together like-minded people, again, globally, to share their ideas and thinking. But I think something that's been, you know, I'm particularly proud of that we've achieved in the company is our networks around all aspects of equality, diversity and inclusion. And so, you know, we have a variety of networks, from a, you know, female business leaders network to a LGBTQ network. And you know, we basically just create space for people to share their experiences, to talk, to listen, and hopefully make our working environment a better place. And we've seen those networks really, really flourish, you know, lots of people joining them. I think last year, you know, the tragic incidents in the US and the Black Lives Matter campaign and how that rose, you know, we spent some time listening to our various different groups around the world, connecting those groups together. And I think it was pretty fundamental, actually, in terms of, you know, what I learned from that and what other senior leaders learned from that. And actually, all we could do was listen because, you know, we don't, I mean, I'm a white male, you know, and, you know, so I can't understand the experience of others without listening to them properly. So the power of networks, I think, has been huge. And it's definitely changing the way we think about our business and the way I think about my life, actually. So
that's awesome. I'd love to continue on that theme of diversity and inclusion and the efforts that Atkins have made. And they're quite, I guess, the commitment and the efforts that you made are pretty public. You're not shy about them, and it's clear that it's a real focus for you. Going from the things that happened last year and the reaction to that, how are you, Atkins, now embedding this, aside from the networks, which seem like a really core part of it? How are you embedding diversity and inclusion in what you do going forwards, and what do you expect to happen from here on in?
Yeah, so I think being, you know, being a global organization, the issues that we have, or the challenges that we're trying to overcome, are slightly different in each of the regions we operate in. You know, so, you know, being a, you know, our head office as part of SNC-Lavalin is in Canada. So, you know, First Nations, and, you know, how we deal with First Nations people, and, you know, how we support communities is incredibly important to us. You know, so we have a number of programs around that. You know, when it then comes to looking at sort of male, female, and gender diversity, you know, we've set some pretty clear targets for where we want to be as a business, and we're working actively towards those at every level of the organization, from, you know, graduate and apprentice entry, and trying to raise the bar in terms of the number of the balance between male and female entrants in early careers, all the way through to looking at how you know, we help senior women move through the organization, stay with us as a business, or perhaps return to us as a business after a period of maternity leave, or whatever else they might have been doing. So you know, we're creating, I think, a whole range of different interventions that are aimed at trying to support that diversity at every stage in someone's career. And you know, we haven't cracked that. You know, we're still working incredibly hard to do it, but I think we've got a great team of people who are supporting us in terms of that drive. And you know, I guess it really does start at an educational perspective. You know, we operate from quite a low base in terms of the number of females that go into engineering careers, and so we do a massive amount of work around STEM and encouraging people into engineering and science and maths in the first place. And but then we try and then obviously continue that through their careers with us.
That's great. And I think that something that jumps out for me there is that you are not resting. I mean, just from the last thing you said, obviously there was a lot of efforts that you're making there. But just from the last thing you said, you're not resting on what some companies or people can rest on, which is like the pipeline problem, or this is we're not getting too many applicants, so it's not our fault. When actually you're saying no, you're making a lot of effort to increase the diversity of that pipeline, which sounds awesome. I'd like to switch tact a little bit to something else that, from the research, I understand is super important to you at the moment, which is digital transformation. One of the interviews I read, I think the headline was kind of "Things can't go on as they are." So it's clear that this is a big topic on the agenda for yourself, Atkins. Why is it such a big topic, and how do you see this kind of panning out, and what are the efforts like at Atkins to make sure that digital transformation goes well and you see benefits from your digital transformation efforts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, that the headline of "Things Can't Go On As They Are" is you know, partly built from personal experience, but also built from company experience and industry experience, you know. So you know, we often see major infrastructure projects suffer challenges along the way, and which quite often leads to cost overrun or program overrun, and basically things being delivered late, which means our customers, the public and or the government or whoever else we might be working for, are not getting the solution they need on time. And, you know, that has wider economic and social impacts. And so look, if we can do that better, if we can guarantee that the infrastructure can be delivered in line with the original budget and program, then actually that's beneficial for everybody. And so, you know, so I think, you know, we will have all seen and read about projects that have not performed in the way that we would like them to. So digital and data and how we pull those things together. And I think it really is a mix of people, data and technology. And because there's a lot of behavioral pieces in there too. But that combination of people, data and technology, I think, now offers an absolutely unique opportunity to do things right first time and to basically get to the solution virtually before you ever put a spade in the ground physically. And you know, so we are investing heavily in actually, you know, when we started out our digital transformation program, I thought it was all going to be about really clever software and how we use that software and immersion rooms and virtual reality and stuff like that. And actually, when it's boiled down to it, you know, it's 80% how people work together, 80% about how they collaborate and you know, not overplaying the theme of listening, but how they listen to each other and take on board some of those things. And I think back to the, you know, my early days on site that I talked about at the beginning, which was, you know, actually just listening to someone who had to build what I designed properly and then really understand, you know, then what that does is huge. So I think, you know, there is an awful lot we can do. It starts right at the concept phase of a project. And but basically, the thing is to create digital twins of what we're going to build, do virtual rehearsals of what we're going to construct, and basically iron out the change that would, you know, often happens during the life of a project. And if we can do all of that, you know, in a low cost way in a virtual environment, which we can, you know, because all the technology's there, and then actually that will make a huge difference to the predictability of delivering major projects around the world. And that's my goal. I want the whole industry actually to transform in that way. Yeah. I'd like us to be at the front of the peloton to help drive that. And but we'll share what we're doing with others
The open approach as well. You mentioned there that it's not just about the technology, and it's probably not just around the suggestions made by or the kind of things rolled out by senior leaders as well. There is, from speaking to leaders like yourself, there is a certain amount of this which is mindset, which is bottom up, which is winning the hearts and minds of people to get them engaged. Have you faced any challenges there, or have you done anything that's help to avoid challenges there to make sure that you can get that mindset of like adopting this kind of stuff into the employee population?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges that we have as an organization is it's full of so many really smart people. And so, you know, there's a tendency to create first rather than collaborate, and I just want to switch that round. So my thing is, you know, collaborate first, create second. And and you know, because there is probably someone else somewhere in our organization that is already doing what you're thinking about. Right now, it might not be quite as much fun to collaborate first and create second, right? Because we love to create things, but actually the efficiency that we drive from that and the sort of the standardization that you can achieve by actually reaching out to others and is huge. And actually it is pretty good fun, you know, learning from others and working with others to develop your own solution, I think is quite a good thing to do. So collaborate first is a big message that I'm trying to put into the organization. And there are so many examples I see, which can be deeply frustrating at times when, you know, I visit our team in the Middle East and they say, wow, look at this amazing thing that we've created here to help solve this client's problem. And I think, actually, I saw that 2 months ago in our business in the US. And you know, if only you'd spoken to the guys in the US first, then perhaps you could have taken it. And it's almost identical. So I often hear the thing that people say, well, it's not quite the same as what they've done. You know, ours does this and theirs does that. And actually, they are the same, really. Yeah. And so I guess just trying to get that mindset of being curious about what others have done before creating something new.
Just talking about transformation in general, I'm fascinated. This is a big old question. So take it as it comes. But how do you have any approaches or kind of tools or ways that you go about making change happen within your organization more generally? Like, is there, how these are big changes that you're talking about, either with D&I, with digital, with mindset shifts. What is your approach to making change happen within your organization? Is there anything that you can share on that at all?
Yeah, so I think there's a big thing about followship. That's not even a word, is it? But let me try and describe what I mean. So, breathing life into something or giving profile to something that you think is important, right? Mm-hmm. And then allowing people to naturally select that because it is a good idea, right? So I think, giving profile to things that you think are going to make a difference, mm-hmm. and then allowing people to choose themselves actually that it's a good idea. So one person builds some followership and then basically they cascade that out and their friends and colleagues pick that up and you start to get that groundswell of a movement, if you like, towards something that's different. And I think we've definitely done that. A number of things around our business, I think, have grown up from that. But there is also a time to be directive as well. We have a fabulous global technology center in India. We don't do work in the local market. That's there to help and support our businesses around the world deliver successfully. And we're based in Bangalore, which is effectively the Silicon Valley of India. So, really high tech staff and graduates that join our business. And we make them available to people around the company to use to, develop automation tools or do something exciting around a particular project. And I found that has worked well. At times we've had to do every technique, of encouragement and showcasing but also direction. So there is a time, I think, to be directive around what we should and shouldn't do. And sometimes you have to make choices. And so you've got three things that are very similar. And actually, you need to pick one of them and progress with that because, it's abortive time and effort to do three. So.
Perfect. Well, thanks very much, Philip. It's been amazing to hear about what you've achieved at Atkins and some of the changes that you've been able to make happen. It does seem like listening is a core part of what you're doing. I'd like to finish with just a couple more questions, potentially quick fire or not. Let's see how they go. But jumping around a little bit, what's one piece of advice that you would give to prospective leaders? So if you imagine almost someone in your shoes earlier towards your career, maybe they're managing a small team within Atkins or a company like Atkins, and they would like to follow in your footsteps and eventually go on to achieve the things that you've achieved and to lead the size of organization that you lead. What's one piece of advice that you might impart on them or something that you might encourage them to think about or focus on as they go through their career?
Yeah, I think I'd say everyone has something to contribute, right? Mm-hmm. So, everyone has a good idea it's our responsibility as leaders to enable people to feel comfortable, to bring the best of themselves to the workplace and able to contribute their thinking, their ideas. And so, I think it's super important that we create the right environment to do that. I think you should look at yourself and how you're leading a team and saying, am I creating that environment where everybody feels able to give their best? Mm-hmm. And to contribute their ideas. And so, I constantly check that myself. And I think that's something others should do.
I love that. So assume, know that everyone has something to contribute given the right environment and go about creating that environment. I think that's a really, really powerful message. And just finally, what makes you most excited about the future of Atkins? It sounds like there's amazing stuff happening. You are building that world that you walk around kind of looking at or looked at as a child. What makes you most excited about where things are going with Atkins?
The biggest thing on my mind at the moment is around net zero and engineering net zero. And that is a huge challenge for us all, but I think a company like ours has almost the moral duty to ensure that, you know, what we're designing into the future is going to achieve net zero carbon. You know, so whether it's a new transportation scheme or a new building or a new hospital or a new school, or, you know, actually, you know, I think we have a real obligation to play our part, and I think we can play our part. And so, you know, this term around engineering net zero, you know, both on new infrastructure and also, you know, dealing with our existing infrastructure, because by 2050, when we should be at carbon net zero, 80% of the assets around us will still be here. You know, so how do we help decarbonize those as well? So, you know, for me, it's a huge intellectual challenge. It's a huge motivator in terms of, you know, what we can do. And you know, I'm hugely excited about the passion I can see across our organization to get involved to make a difference in that regard. So, yeah, I'm hugely excited about that.
And if you can meaningfully contribute to that, then what an achievement to look back on. Well, thanks so much, Philip, and thanks so much for joining us today and sharing your story. And look forward to all of the great feedback that we'll have on this episode. So thank you very much.
My pleasure, Will. Thank you.
Thanks to Philip for speaking with me in this episode, and thanks to you for listening today. As always, if you want to hear about any new episodes, then subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you happen to listen to us. Have a great day.